"We will fry potatoes," she said. Nayeli smelled smoke and a tart, ugly stink. She saw gulls in great clouds above them, circling, whirling, so many gulls they looked like fog, like some strange tatters of white clouds blown by a hurricane rolling up the coast of Nayarit. They topped the rise, and Nayeli ran into the backs of her girls. They were standing there, staring. She peeked around Yolo's back and opened her mouth, but said nothing. Tacho looked at her, and for once she thought she saw real awe in his face. "Home," Don Porfirio said. Before them, a malodorous volcano of garbage rose 200 feet or more. It was dark gray, ashen, black, and it was covered in flecks of white paper, as if small snowdrifts were on its slopes. Gulls swirled and shrieked, and packs of feral dogs trotted down slope. The black mountain was abandoned. A road cut across its face, and far above they could see and hear orange tractors moving soil over the trash. The sky above the hill was gray and heavy with clouds. Occasionally, smoke broke from the slope and curled away, blue and thin in the wind. It made Nayeli feel cold. "From up there," Don Porfirio said, pointing, "you can see America." Chapter 13. Huddled at the foot of the hill, dark brown men bent to small fires. They were burning electrical wires. The acrid chemical stink of the smoke wafted across to the friends. The men melted the plastic sheaths off the wires and sold the copper strands to the recyclers. Nayeli saw them poking at the small fires with sticks and small poles, hunched, cavemen in a wasteland. The sky peeled back for a moment, and a weak ray of sunset spilled over the scene, like the diseased eye of some forgetful god, the light bearing with it cold in place of heat. A gust of wind came from the ocean. They were astounded to see a bright vista of the Pacific to their right. Copper sun fell upon the water. The wind had shattered the clouds there and spilled rainfalls of illumination. Fat oil tankers lounged in the glow, and beyond, islands could be seen on the horizon. It looked warm. "Is that Hawaii?" Vampi asked, but they all told her not to be an idiot. The ocean breeze lifted white plastic bags from the slopes of the Black Hill. They rose like ghosts. It was quite beautiful. The bags floated silently in waves, soaring and falling and drifting too, pale balloons full of unwanted wind. They drifted off the slopes and settled slowly upon the foreground, a dry, empty crescent of graves and rough holes in the ashen soil. All before them, a crude cemetery sprawled. Uphill, to the east, a squat crematorium waited in a fenced enclosure. Its chimney was not spewing smoke, and its door hung open, but the chain-link gate was sealed with a great combination lock. Sweeping past them, at the foot of the garbage volcano, were graves. Some were cement slabs, some were bare mounds of trash and pebbles. Nayeli saw many handmade crosses, blue wood, red and white wood. A rusted tractor sat at the edge of the boneyard, a backhoe. Its rear claw was raised and frozen in place, caked with old hard mud. It was posed like a huge scorpion, forgotten there. Before it, 7 open holes. To the west, set against the vista of the sea and the islands, was a small hill covered in 100 small plots. Cribs and playpens stood guard over these small rectangles. Some were painted. Wild mustard and dandelions sprouted among them. "The children," Tacho said. And he was right. As they moved down the slope, following Doña Araceli, they saw names painted on the baby furniture. Old glass jars with wax flowers, a doll propped against a baby's crib, all of it muddy and collapsing in the ashes. Huge abandoned truck tires lay at the foot of the children's hill. Collapsed graves festered in the mud, small crosses tumbled. The smell of human feces rose from the centers of the tires. Beside this long, sad place, there were many houses, and Porfirio stood in the doorway of a square blue shack and waved at them. "Come!" he was calling. "Welcome!" The four friends reached out for each other as they walked, and they held each other's hands. "Life is good!" Don Porfirio hollered. Tacho had made the mistake of walking down to the bodega of the barrio to buy eggs, and he spied a bottle of rum and bought it as a gift. Don Porfirio guzzled rum from a peanut butter jar and danced in place, raising dust from the floor of the shack. The girls sat on an ancient bunk bed jammed in a corner, salvaged, though they didn't know it, from the trash. On the other side of the bare room, Porfirio and Araceli's sagging bed. The shack smelled of smoke and spoiled lard. Tacho sat on a wooden kitchen chair as Porfirio danced. Nayeli wondered if he was doing a Mixtec dance or an alcoholic shuffle. She did not know. Araceli had a stove set halfway between the bunk beds and the other bed. It was really the shell of a stove, and Araceli was stuffing paper wads into the oven and lighting them. Fire came out of the stove holes on top. She fed twigs in, then a few chunks of 2x4, and slammed the oven door closed. She put a big pan on the burner and amazed the friends by lifting a hinged flap in the wooden wall so the smoke could go outside. She fastened the wooden shutter to a hook screwed into the wood. "I invented that!" Porfirio shouted. "I am a genius!" "Bravo!" Tacho said. He sipped some rum from a plastic Hamburglar cup. The girls just stared. They were appalled by the filth. They were scared of the dump and the dirt. Yolo could almost see tides of lice awakening and creeping toward her. Her scalp crawled with imagined vermin. She began picking at herself, sure that little creatures with many legs were piercing her scalp and depositing disease in her flesh. Doña Araceli sliced her potatoes with a huge knife. They sizzled in the melting lard. Nayeli's stomach growled as soon as the heady odor hit her. Vampi moaned. Araceli deftly diced an onion and dropped it in with the thin slices of potato. She poked at it with her knife. When this part of their supper was done, she slid it onto a cracked plate and immediately broke Tacho's half-dozen eggs into the skillet and fried them. The girls had never smelled anything so delicious in their lives. Porfirio stopped dancing long enough to pull a small table in from the yard and set plates all around.
6 plates, he noted. It is a feast! God is great! Isn't God great, vieja? He called to Araceli.
God is great, she replied, putting a little food on each plate. Porfirio followed her, placing 2 stale rolls on each plate. He produced a huge can of jalapeno peppers.
Missionaries, he crowed, God loves Chile!
He handed each of them a fork.
"Let us pray," he said.
They gathered at the table and held hands. Porfirio was listening to port. Nayeli thought he'd fall over, but he smiled and tipped back his head and said,
"Thank you, God."
Two tears rolled down his face.
"Amen."
Tacho sat, then noticed none of the rest of them had chairs, so he stood back up. They stood eating together, and when the food was gone, they wiped the grease off the plates with pieces of sweet roll. Porfirio laughed all the way through the meal, patting Tacho's spiky hair.
"Do my hair like that," he kept repeating.
They all laughed. After a while, a baby pig wandered in, followed by a yellow duckling. Porfirio tossed them bits of his rolls. He laughed again when the animals vanished under his bed for a good night's sleep. The outhouse was noxious, and nobody wanted to use it. It was very hard to get comfortable on the narrow mattresses of the bunk beds, and Tacho gallantly insisted on sleeping at the foot of the bed on a folded blanket. It broke Nayeli's heart to see him lying in the dirt, but he was so rummed up he fell asleep quickly. He snored, but so did Porfirio and Araceli. They had hung a blanket between the two halves of the room to give the friends some privacy. Everyone slept in their clothes. Yolo took the top bunk and refused to share it, so Vampi lay across Nayeli at the bottom, whimpering and muttering in her sleep, sticking her foot in Nayeli's back, laying her arm over her neck. No wonder Yolo was sick of sharing bed with the vampire. At dawn, Nayeli rose and slipped her shoes on and stepped outside. The dump was still. The light was the color of a winter ocean, and a small pall of smoke lay over the village. Chickens clucked softly around her. She could hear snoring coming from the shacks on either side. Suddenly, a rooster down the block let loose his call. Pigs snorted and fretted. The yard was a small patch of gray soil. Doña Araceli had planted roses. Nayeli was startled by them. The fence was apparently made of bed springs tied together. The pig next door shoved its snout into the fence and wiggled its nostrils, trying to catch a whiff of Nayeli. All along the fence, rose bushes bloomed. Red roses, pink roses, yellow. She stepped out into the dirt alley. A dog with peeling fur stood and wagged its tail at her. She waved her hand at it to try to make it back off. It trotted to her and put its filthy head against her leg. Nayeli backed away from the dog and wandered down the alley to the edge of the cemetery. She was startled to see black smoke rising from one of the graves. The crosses and painted furniture were stark in the morning light, etched like charcoal drawings. Somewhere, a radio was playing. She recognized it. Dave Matthews. She always liked that Rola, the one where he asked the woman to crash into him, though now it seemed like the loneliest thing she'd ever heard. It shook her, this place. It was awful, tragic. Yet it moved her. The sorrow she felt. It was profound. It was moving, somehow. The sorrow of the terrible abandoned garbage dump and the sad graves and the lonesome shacks made her feel something so far inside herself that she could not define it or place it. She was so disturbed and sad that it gave her the strangest comfort. Like something she suspected about life all along was being confirmed, and the sorrow she felt in her bed at night was reflected by this sad soil. She stepped toward the graves. She had to touch them. She had to see the names painted on the crosses. She smiled. She was acting like Vampi, Nayeli the Goth. There was no one in sight as she passed among the graves. She picked a few blue flowers from the weeds and put them on the mounds. She picked trash off the cement slab of Uvaldo Borrego. She straightened the tilted cross of Maria Zapeda and braced it with stones. She stood among the graves and looked back at the huts and shacks of the village. If she squinted, it almost seemed rustic. A sweet little town painted in all the Mexican primary colors. Somewhere, Tacho had found a store. She wondered if there might be a telephone there. She had Irma's number memorized, and she had Matt's card in her pocket. Should she call? She heard a voice behind her say, "Psst." She glanced. An awful young man was standing on a garbage mound above her. She turned her back on him.
"Oye, mora!"
She moved away and stood by a new grave. Nayeli had just about had it with badly behaved border men.
"No me oyes?" he called. "I'm talking to you."
"No," she said. "I hear you. I am just not listening to you." He stared down at her.
"Your mistake, sweetheart," he said.
Chapter 14. There he stood, surveying his realm. The warrior, Atomico. King of the hill, baddest of the trash pickers. The master of the Dompe, known by all, feared by many. He wore baggy suit trousers cinched tight at his narrow waist, a sleeveless white undershirt. His tattoos were exposed. Zapata on his right bicep, the yin-yang symbol on his left shoulder. Ever since he'd seen the movie Yojimbo on San Diego Public Television, when he was stationed at the Mexican Army's dismal 7th Battalion down the Periférico, he knew he was a warrior. He'd formed a judo club in the barracks. He'd declared himself a samurai. And that's what he was. His head was shaved, and his brow was covered with an Apache red bandana folded tight and tied just above his brows. His mustache drooped at the corners of his mouth, and his chin whiskers were getting thick, hiding the small pox scars on his cheeks. Across his chest, a tight sash made from curtains he'd found before the dump was closed down. And beside him, his long samurai sword. Well, it was a staff, but it was noble and powerful in his hands. Every garbage picker worth his salt had a staff of some sort. Most of them just had broom handles with a nail or two in the end. They had no vision, no pride. You had to have something to move the trash and fish for goodies. You had to kill the rats and chase off the dogs. For most of them, any pole would do. But not for Atomico. He was a Ronin. His staff was his pride and his weapon. It was an extension of himself. And there it was, before him in the dawn light. Gripped in his right fist, and forming a fulcrum upon which he leaned, like a Maasai warrior, National Geographic special, Tijuana's Channel 12, with his right foot propped against his left knee. It was his second staff. The first had splintered when a tractor drove over it. This one was a wrist-thick, 6-foot length of bamboo. It had taken him years to find it. It was pliant, but firm. He had discovered tubes of epoxy glue in the dump, and he'd carefully filled the hollow center of the shaft with it, allowing it to harden. But that wasn't all he'd done. He'd inserted the knob from a broken-off Hurst power shifter into the end of the staff, and after the epoxy had glued it in place, He had carefully and fastidiously wrapped copper wires in overlapping patterns to bolster the bamboo around the stick shift. At the other end of the staff, he had poured in marbles and ball bearings before the last epoxy drooled in. He capped the open end with a hammered can lid, superglue, and more of his elaborate copper wire work. In the middle, he had wrapped the smooth bamboo with friction tape. All things found in the endless bounty of the garbage dump. It was a thing of beauty, his staff. Frankly, it was a bit heavy for dump work, but it was also lethal. Nobody ever messed with Atomico, not when he was carrying his weapon. He looked down upon this mysterious dark girl and scratched his whiskers.
"Hurt me, girlie," he called. "I want to be wounded by you."
She made a dismissive sound and walked farther from him. Atomico watched her. She was short, just like he liked them. He could see the muscles in her legs, and she smiled even when she frowned. He was a fool for that. That right there made him crazy. He put his foot down, spun the staff once like a great baton, and inserted it under the sash at his back. He put his hands on his hips and called,
"I am Atomico!"
He hopped down off his mound and paced along behind her.
"Who are you?" he demanded.
"None of your business."
"Ooh, saucy."
She walked three rows away from him. "Go away," she said.
"Never."
"I'm busy."
"I am here to serve you."
"Oh, please." She had heard better lines than that. Atomico was the kind of man given to visions and illuminations. Since they'd closed the dump, he had wondered what the Buddha had in store for him. Would he follow the trash to Tecate? Hell no. He wasn't some country boy. He was a city dog. Perhaps he could mine the old garbage, like the old-timers who were now digging in the sides of the hill. But the trash mafia that the owners had hired to police the slopes would beat the miners if they caught them. Atomico had entered into several fights already, defending the peasants from the hired guns, but... nah, climbing in stinking dark holes wasn't for him. He was in need of a quest.
"You're not from here," he noted.
"No."
"Where then?"
"You're so rude," she snapped.
"I'm ugly, too," he said.
He scratched his whiskers. She could hear his nails scritching in them.
"God, so?"
We're from Sinaloa.
"We?"
he said. "They're asleep right now," she said. "But they'll hear me if I call, so don't do anything funny."
He said, "I am Atomico, Esa. I don't do anything funny."
She thought that was funny. "We came from a place," she said, "that is under threat."
"What kind of threat?"
"Narcos," she said. "Bandidos." It sounded dramatic, silly. She blushed. "So," she continued, "we came seeking soldiers." He stood taller and smiled. He pounded his own chest.
"I am a sergeant in the Mexican army."
"Well, I was until I ran away." "Wonderful," she said. "You ran away." She shook her head and moved away from him again.
"I am a great warrior."
"Shoo," she said. "Go on your way." People in the dump had no money for cocaine or pot or pills, but they were fools for tweak. The lost young ones smoked cheap meth as fast as they could get it. These hopeless ice zombies were so racked with chemical poisons and dry rot that they didn't even have shacks. They tipped sheets of plywood against headstones in the boneyard and slept and twitched right there in the dirt. It was the curse of the dump. a shocking thing that the self-respecting trash pickers rejected out of hand. These terrible tweakers stole everything, even the meager cans of orange juice and broken toys the garbage miners managed to dig out of the Black Hill. They never made it all the way to the top, so they never saw the view. Besides, they were too skinny and broken to battle the mafiosos up there. So they stuck to the graves and the sad wire burners, and they shuffled out to the streets and mugged women coming home from work in the dark. Two of the ice zombies watched Nayeli as she walked away from Atomico. She had clearly said something severe to him, and he'd waved his hand at her in anger and turned his back. And now she was coming down the hill toward the big tires and the mud bog. They could jump her fast, they thought. They could get her on the ground before she cried out. She looked good. Looked like she had a watch, at least. The meth made them crazy for sex when they were fired up. But now they were in the gray dregs. Their teeth hurt, their guts churned, and all they wanted was money for more smoke. They could steal her shoes. The zombies rose in front of her and behind her, ragged and stinking. They put their hands out to block her escape. She looked back and forth at them. Nayeli planted her feet. She fainted to the right, but the tall tweaker in front of her smiled and blocked her. His teeth were black. Thinking it would be impressive, the zombie said, "How about a kiss?" Atomico's staff whistled slightly as it came down. The noise the shifter knob made connecting with the tweaker's head was truly shocking, and Nayeli flinched. The addict dropped like a wet towel. Atomico leapt behind Nayeli and spun the staff slowly in both hands. The other tweaker stared at the propeller, hypnotized. Atomico moved slowly in a circle, and the ice zombie tried to back away. "Oh no, my son," Atomico said. "There is no escape from Atomico." Nayeli was noticing that Atomico needed to announce his idiotic name at every opportunity. He grabbed the staff in both hands and made three lunges, swinging the bamboo savagely with each forward stomp of his foot. The tweaker, whipped, battered, and flipped over in 3 seconds, never knew what hit him. Both his shoulders were smashed and his head was cracked open. Flat on his back, he saw the gulls double and triple before he passed out. Atomico spun around to face Nayeli and whirled the staff and caught it under his arm, holding it extended before him. He looked all around them and grinned, inserted his weapon back in his sash, where it rose at a jaunty angle above his shoulder. "I am Atomico," he said. "How do you do?" Nayeli replied. "I like the maricón," Atomico said. Tacho said, "Thank God for small blessings." Atomico punched him on the shoulder. They were great friends, in his opinion. Tacho looked at him for an extended moment. "Ow," he said. They were sitting around, enjoying the sun, on benches Don Porfirio had hammered together out of scrap wood. Tacho was putting gel in Porfirio's hair and working it up into spikes. Porfirio, still buzzing from last night, sipped more rum from his jar, only he had put milk and sugar in it. Tacho held up a mirror, and Porfirio laughed at his own hair. Nayeli said, "I didn't need you to save me." Atomico sneered. "I did my duty," he said. "I defended you." She shook her head. He had followed her through the alleys of the little workers' village. He'd stood aside as she called Aunt Irma, collect, from a battered payphone on a crooked pole outside a small bodega that gave up the smell of fried pork rinds and sheets of beef jerky. As the phone rang, Atomiko cast evil glares at passers-by, holding his pole before him in a threatening manner. The phone rang and rang. Tia Irma was apparently out, running the town, or working the counter at the Fallen Hand. Nayeli could imagine the sound of the phone echoing in the empty house. She had heard it 100 times before. She could see the table, the chairs, the yellow walls, the old refrigerator. It almost made her swoon. She could smell Irma's house. She could see the insane Tom Turkey strutting in the courtyard, inflated and threatening the phone, rattling his feathers as he made mindless noises in his throat. "Miss," the operator said, "no one is answering." "Let it ring." 3 more rings. "Miss, wait." 5 more rings. "Really, miss?" 3 more rings. The operator cut her off. Nayeli had tears in her eyes. "Don't be sad," Atomiko said. "I am here." Chapter 15. Vampi was with Doña Araceli watering the roses. Yola was sitting with Don Porfirio, and she took a sip of his rum and milk cocktail and liked it. Nayeli was trying to ignore Atomiko as Tacho told him their story. At certain cardinal points of the epic, the intensely irritating warrior of the garbage dump snapped his fingers and exalted some hipster phrase like "orale" or "chido" or "no chingues güey." Eventually, he stopped Tacho to clarify the narrative. "Wait, you're going across illegally to collect vatos to take home?" "Correct. You're collecting men. 7 men. And you'll smuggle them out of the Unaites?" "Yes. Back to Mexico." "Exactly. But you have to sneak." "See." "Because it's illegal to transport illegals." "Correct. Even if they're going south." "Right." "Holy Christ, I love this story." It was his kind of yarn. A quest. He slapped hands with Yolo, who kept sipping the rum milkshake and was feeling warm toward everyone. He was thinking, Ronin. Yolo, growing impatient with all this talk, said, "I don't know why you don't simply recruit 7 of these men right here and let's go home."
"Recruit me," said Porfirio.
He and Yolo took swigs from the jar.
"I want to go."
Vampi cried,
"Take Atomiko."
Tacho said, "I'm going north. I want to see Hollywood, and that's that." "We have a mission," Nayeli reminded them. Atomiko patted his belly like the Buddha and smiled upon his poor benighted children.
"Get 7 of these muchachos right here," Yolo advised. "Get on the bus, go home."
"No fuss," Vampi said.
"No border patrol."
"No border."
"No money spent," Yolo said. "We can go home and give them back their money." Porfirio tipped the jar at her and gulped some more rum milk. Doña Araceli appeared and pried the jar from his hand and took it away.
"Hey,"
he said, but he couldn't focus on her. Atomiko cleared his throat. "No," he said. He shook his head. "No, you can't do it that way."
"Do what? Which way?" Nayeli said.
Tacho said,
"I know where he's going. Listen to him." "You can't recruit vatos from the Dompe," Atomiko said. "It's not what you set out to do. You have to accomplish your quest. to El Norte. Besides, these warriors are not worthy.
What is this? Yolo complained. A fairy tale?
¿Y tú? ¿Qué eres, King Arthur?
He smiled at her.
I am Atomico, he reminded her.
As if we haven't heard that, she said.
Look, these men here, they came from here.
The warrior pointed south with his staff.
They came from the lands you left, and they ran out of steam right here. You need the men who made it through the border. You need the warriors who have passed their challenge, men worthy of the honor.
The girls had not heard this kind of talk outside of the movies, and it was kind of stirring.
We, here, have our lives, Atomico said. Some of us failed to make it across. Some of us just wanted to pick the trash. Some of us, like me, were born right here, but this is home. We have houses and families. ¿Que no, Porfirio?
Right,
Porfirio yelled. Atomico swung his staff north.
The warriors are before you, he intoned.
Everyone stared at him. He liked it that way.
You must go across the line to retrieve them.
Yolo shook her head and looked bored. Tacho nodded at Nayeli.
We have to go, he said. Besides, there will be men there who miss Mexico.
Nayeli looked into all their faces.
Still, Atomico drawled.
He poked at the gray soil with his shifter knob.
You need a man like me, he said, on your journey.
They would run you out of Tres Camarones on a rail, Nayeli replied.
I don't care about your stupid town. I live on the border, Esa. This is where it's all happening. Did I say I wanted to go to your sad little town? What I said was, you need a man like me on your mission.
Nayeli laughed dismissively.
I can get you across, he said.
You?
Nayeli scoffed. He drew himself as tall as he could, tightened his sash, and ruined the noble pose by scratching his whiskers again.
Sure, he said.
Have you ever been across? She asked.
Me? Why would I go across?
Oh, yes, your life is so elegant here, she said. Why would you leave?
Atomico turned to Tacho and said, My life? What is wrong with my life?
Nada, Tacho said.
He gave Nayeli one of his looks, that Tacho eyebrow and tip of the chin. It said, Mi hija, you're being rude.
In fact, pinche Nayeli, Atomico sniffed, I used to go to the other side all the time. Me and my soldiers used to run across the fence and buy soda at McDonald's. He spit. So there.
Wait, illegal alien soldiers? Nayeli said.
He shrugged.
Until we got caught, he muttered.
He planted the end of his staff in the soil and looked implacable and, in his own opinion, formidable.
You want to go or not?
Nayeli crossed her arms.
Tacho said, Yes, I want to go.
Orale pues, Atomico said. We boys are going. What about you girls? You have cojones or what?
Yolo said, Where did this creature come from?
I want to go after my father, Nayeli said.
There you go, Atomico enthused.
He stepped out of Porfirio and Araceli's small yard. He looked back toward the bulk of the village, and he put his fingers to his lips and whistled louder than anyone Nayeli had ever heard. She opened her mouth in shock. He was whistling a ditty, what people in Los Yunaites might have recognized as Shave and a Haircut. But, of course, There is no such phrase in Mexico. That same rhythm was bad boy code for the ultimate obscenity. Chinga tu madre. No self-respecting gentleman in Tres Camarones would whistle that in front of three fine young ladies. Before she could comment, a decrepit and slouching white Olds 88 crept out of an alley and made its rough way over the rocks and broken glass. Its muffler was gone, and it made a loud glubba-glubba noise as it came, leaking curtains of blue fumes. It eased to a halt and seemed to list a little further to the left. A driver as ugly as Atomico leapt out. His hair was slicked back with oil, and he had a mustache that looked like he'd stolen it from a pimp downtown. "Was he just sitting there, waiting to hear from you?" Nayeli said.
"I have powers," Atomico boasted. "I summon the wind and the stars."
"You are such a loser," she said. The new cholo snapped his fingers and pointed at Nayeli. In badly accented English, he barked,
"Jew, show me Jew papers."
He and Atomico knocked knuckles and laughed. The cholo turned to Tacho.
"Tiene papeles?" he demanded. "Jew wetback?"
Again, gales of laughter from these rude idiots. Nayeli walked away from them.
"Loca," the driver said, "you need me."
"That's like saying I need cancer."
"Aye,"
he said. He put his hand over his heart and staggered backward.
"Badass. She's hard, brother."
He and Atomico slapped palms.
"Esta firme, la mora," Atomico announced. "She's so fierce, my little brown girl."
Nayeli hung her mouth open at Tacho in disbelief that Atomico would say so many stupid things.
"I can take you, no problem," the driver said.
"I doubt it," Nayeli snapped. Tacho, the goodwill ambassador of Tres Camarones, stepped in.
"How?" he asked. "What do we do?"
The driver looked at him.
"Y este?" he asked.
"He's cool," Atomico said.
The driver said,
"I'll take you to Libertad. You know Colonia Libertad?"
Tacho shook his head. Nayeli thought of the non-existent Chavarin's phone number. Yolo and Vampi stared at the ground in their despair.
"It's rough, I'm not gonna lie," the driver said. "But I'll set you up with a good guide, and you'll go under the fence and into the canyons. They'll get you up to Ote."
"What's Ote?"
Atomico smiled, spun his staff in front of him.
"That," he said, "is the United States."
Tacho and Nayeli looked at each other.
"When?" she said.
"Right now."
"How much?" Tacho asked.
Atomico and the driver muttered.
"My socio here wants me to give you a good deal," the driver said. "I'll take you for 150 each."
Tacho and Nayeli got together and acted like they were discussing the proposal, but they didn't know if the price was good or bad or what they were doing.
"I guess so," Nayeli said.
"Good," Atomico crowed. "Wait here."
"Why?"
"I'm going to get my stuff," he cried, and ran off.
Don Porfirio had snuck off and swiped his jar of rum and milk and sugar from Araceli, and he'd poured the rest of the rum in and had it shaken up into a sweet foam, and he and Yolo powered down the whole thing. Yolo, feeling no pain at all, said,
"That Atomico, he is definitely not Yul Brynner."
"Mexico's greatest movie star," Nayeli said, with deep nostalgia for Irma and Tres Camarones. Nayeli was deeply opposed to Atomiko's presence, but Tacho and the girls voted her down. They felt they could use another warrior for the crossing, and frankly, now that Yolo was drunk, she thought Atomiko was handsome and dashing. Nayeli couldn't believe her ears. But she also knew the crossing was supposed to be deadly, and maybe Atomiko's pole would be of use should they meet any bad men. He also carried a tiny Hello Kitty backpack. Maybe he had weapons in there. Vampi, to be helpful, gave him her switchblade. They said their farewells to Araceli and Porfirio. The couple absolutely refused any money for their hospitality, but Nayeli snuck in their house as they were hugging and patting Vampi and left a $20 bill on their little table. Vampi cried disconsolately when she said goodbye to their hosts, and Araceli gave her a rose. Nayeli and Tacho and Atomiko crammed into the back seat, the staff out the window. "Why are you coming again?" Nayeli asked him.
"I'm bored. Nothing on TV," Atomiko replied.
Yolo laughed and threw him a wide drunken wink over the front seat.
"They're going to get married," she said to Vampi.
"Really?"
said Vampi.
"We should go to Las Vegas," Yolo said.
"Oh, yes," Vampi enthused. "Elvis!"
"Enough," Nayeli warned.
"Want to hold my hand?" Atomiko asked.
"Are you crazy?"
Nayeli shouted.
He looked out the window mildly.
"Sweetheart," he said.
The driver's name was Wino. The Camarones crew didn't speak any version of Spanglish, so they didn't know how dashing and bad it was to be called Wino. To them, it sounded like Aino, which was a cry of dread. He was an excellent tour guide. They realized to their shock that he loved Tijuana. On their way to Libertad, he veered off the road and drove up the tormented streets of a hillside colonia.
"You have to see this," Wino declared.
They pulled into a dirt gully and beheld a three-story house built in the shape of a nude woman. She was painted in flesh tones, and her nipples were large red ovals. There was a door in her pubis.
"That," Atomiko announced, "is great art."
"Oh," Yolo said, "my God."
Tacho said, "If she gets pregnant, does she give birth to a garage?" Atomiko chuckled.
"1 point," he said, "for the maricón."
Onward, down the narrow and clogged road that accessed the free road to Ensenada, but for them would be passage to the centro. On to the center of town, past the back end of the Palacio Azteca Hotel. A quick detour into the edge of Colonia Cacho for a restorative stop at Taco Row. 18-cent carne asada tacos at Tacos El Paisano. A brief gawk at the municipal bullring, and on, down to the traffic circles and pedestrian bridges and Mexican department stores. Conasupo and Pemex on every side. See that statue there of the Aztec king, holding his sword by his side? He starts out every morning holding it over his head, but he gets tired and the sword droops. Across the boulevard and to the right, up the hill. Onward. Wino and Atomiko singing out the varied delights of fair Tijuana, the planes landing above them at Tijuana International Airport, the street dogs, the hot women in their impossible heels, the taxis, the multicolored buses, and into the labyrinth of Libertad.
Onward to the crossing.
Colonia Libertad was the notorious launching pad for a million border crossings. The United States had foiled the massive incursions of the 1970s and 80s with the beefed-up new border fences and stadium lights and plowed-under acres of roadways on the other side, where white border patrol trucks cruised like sharks in a lagoon. Dirt streets and alleys piled up and down steep ravines. Houses went right up to the line. You could climb on a chicken coop and look into the windshield of a migra truck. People played soccer. Young men sat on the slopes and watched the fences, waiting for their moment. They were still going across, in spite of the heightened security. Now they weren't gathered in hundreds, but in dozens, and many of them would be caught. They'd be back tomorrow to try it again. All around, music blared from speakers in shop doorways and the roofs of cars. Children ran through the scene, impervious to the plots and plans, making their ways among the groups of adventurers and their shady guides. The fence here was old and battered and patched. Taco carts blew smoke on corners, and in empty lots, the fence runners, having last meals in Mexico, cheap tripe and chicken tacos. Rabbit tacos were supposedly for sale over by the drugstore where the water bottles were double the usual price. Coyotes, hanging cigarettes off their lips and demonstrating their tattoos and Slayer baseball caps, liked to quip, "Those rabbit tacos? I saw a guy unloading a truck by the cart, and those rabbits had long tails, ha ha." The walkers got queasy every time. Christian do-gooders rolled through in vans. Their blonde locks and shiny white faces shone like headlights in the sun. Nayeli watched to see if Matt's face was among them. Atomico and Wino negotiated with a vato with a deep slouch and a black pork pie hat. This character wore fingerless gloves and chain-smoked. The three girls would not admit it, but they were afraid of him. Afraid of the entire colonia and the fence and the border. Afraid of Tijuana. They hid behind Tacho, who threw out his chest and looked fierce and tried to hide his own fear. Wino kissed Vumpy's hand and pinched Yolo's butt and decided not to touch Nayeli. They watched him drive away, honking his horn in that awful shave-and-a-haircut rhythm. Nayeli never imagined she would miss Wino, but there it was. Suddenly, people were jumping up and yelling and trotting along the fence. Nayeli craned to look. The white roof of a border patrol truck showed over the top of the rusted metal wall as it cruised the other side. The boys threw rocks over the fence, and some of the rocks clanged off the sheet metal roof of the truck. It stopped. People cursed and laughed and hurried away. Nayeli saw the top of the agent's head as he got out. The coyote sidled up to them. Nayeli asked, "Is he going to shoot at us?" The guy flicked his cigarette away. "Nel," he said, which was his Cholo way of saying no. The agent vanished behind the top of the fence as he walked around to the near side of the truck. In a moment, Nayeli saw his arm rise. His fist came up, and he shot the finger to the Mexicans. They laughed and whistled insults back at him. She watched him walk back around the truck to his door. She caught a quick flash of his face. He was laughing. The truck moved on, kicking up dust that drifted over the fence and settled on their heads. "That dust," said the coyote, "is the United States invading Mexico." "It's an act of war," Atomico proclaimed. Far to the east, the hills were still black from the last great California fires. The coyote said, "There was burned-up Mexicans all over those hills." It seemed to amuse him. Yola was almost sober. She nudged Nayeli with her elbow. "Girl," she said, There is still time to go home.
Yeah, Vampi agreed. We are making a terrible mistake.
We don't know this man, Yolo said. Don't worry. I'm here, Atomiko said.
We don't know you either.
Tacho ran his fingers along his money belt. He was this close. He wasn't turning back. I'm going, he said.
Nayeli said nothing, just stared over the fence as the dark spread and the noise behind them changed to the heavy breath of Tijuana at night.
Nayeli, what are we going to do when we get there? Asked Yolo.
I don't know, Nayeli admitted. Call Matt?
Oh. Yolo started to smile. All right. And the coyote spoke.
Orale, gather around, gather around. You, what's your name, Nayeli? You're the leader? Good, listen up. My socio, Atomiko, here speaks highly of you, so I'm going to take you quick, right in. No chingaderas, all right? Move fast, don't cry, don't give me any shit, understand? We're going under the fence right there. The metal's cut. We hit it with acetylene torches when the migra isn't looking. There's a doorway right there behind the bushes. I go first. If it's clear, I'll whistle. You haul ass. Girls first, the boy, what's her name? Tacho, last. Atomiko will slide the door shut. He says he'll follow. I think he's in love with Nayeli, though it could be Tacho. Ha! I got my eye on the vampire. Hot. In another life, right, Mora? Come see me when you get rich in Gringolandia. Orale, run straight across the Migra road. Straight. And fast, cabrones. Do you hear? Keep low and run fast. Right across the road, through the bushes, is an arroyo. I'll be down there. Don't jump on my head. But get down in there with me. We'll haul ass to the north. That's to the right, for you little girlies who don't know what direction you're going. Right. Pay attention. I don't have time to repeat this shit. To the right, run 50 yards and we cut sharp left. Keep close enough to see the person in front, because if you get separated,